Welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. I'm your host, Rima Katz. Today, we're diving into the world of ISO 20022. At the most basic level, it's a global messaging standard that was set by the International Organization for Standardization, and it can be used for all types of financial communication. To further dig into this topic and talk about the advantages, as well as the challenges of embracing ISO 20022, I'm joined by Laura Sullivan, Senior Product Manager at Form3, and Albert Bodine, Director of Commercial and Enterprise Payments at Javelin Strategy and Research. Thank you both for joining me today. To start us off, Laura, how does the ISO 20022 conversion appear to be going for schemes such as SWIFT, which now support this?
Well, I realized when I was thinking about this earlier, there are really two schemes that are two scenarios that are going on. One is many of the newer schemes around the world, particularly the instant payment schemes, all went directly to ISO, which makes total sense. So there are definitely a lot of schemes that are already ISO, and those are going fairly well. It's a lot easier when you're designing something brand new. But with things like SWIFT and in 2025 chips and Fedwire, those are actual conversions from an existing format. And that is definitely a bigger challenge. I was at a conference recently, and one of the interesting things that come up with the SWIFT conversion, and that, you know, was enabled in March. And so there are definitely banks that are sending ISO messages. But one of the interesting notes that one of the banks made is all of a sudden they started seeing all this additional address information. And I thought about it. So all the banks' core processing systems typically stored way more address information than you could fit into a payment, because both SWIFT and Fedwire, you had four lines of 35 characters, and now it's, I won't say unlimited, but virtually. And so even without changing anything about their input, really, evidently a number of banks had enabled sending the full address from their core processing systems, because typically that's where addresses are retrieved. And so it led to issues with banks processing sanctions checking, because suddenly they had all this address information. So a payment that might have been flowing through for years successfully, now it suddenly had another line of address, which had something that would trigger a sanctions review. So that was a really interesting side note that people saw happening the minute that banks started sending the ISO messages. So even though they hadn't necessarily all changed their input mechanisms to support ISO, they did change that piece. So I thought that was kind of fascinating note as to a side outcome of enabling ISO. But other than that, things seem to be going smoothly. I'm not sure how much true adoption, so sending ISO with existing data, aside from the address, versus sending ISO and really leveraging all the new data is a different scenario. And there are actually fields that the SWIFT Payments Market Practice Group has suggested should not be used until November of this year, when SWIFT has some more facilities in place. So it didn't cause major problems, but jury is still out on how much of that new format is truly being leveraged.
You and I had a conversation a few weeks ago about 20022. And I'm curious to know, I think that most of the world perceives the standard as being the standard, as being the standard. And how would you rate the consistency of ISO implementations globally? I mean, are we seeing that there's one or two versions of it, or are we seeing there are 10 or 20 versions of implementations out there?
Unfortunately, my experience has been that every payment scheme has implemented it slightly differently. I would still say we're talking 90% of it is the same, but a combination of schemes that are using message types a little differently, and there certainly has been learning as we've gone along with ISO adoption around the world. And so message types that might have been used for some of the more esoteric things, status requests, big one in the US is requests for payment, chips, and at least TCH, RTP, and Fedwire using completely different message types for that, for example. And then the usage of some fields. And, you know, we're seeing that a lot, because we have a payments API that we intend to use for all different message types. And as we're implementing the US payment types, we're finding that we're having to adjust that API. So there are very clearly fields that the US market is requiring, because we're trying to limit the differences. But there are fields that the US market, and that's FedNow, RTP, and Fedwire, are requiring that are not used elsewhere. So it was probably too much of a utopian hope that right. everything would be the same. So there are differences. We can still work with them. It just probably leads more to having a lot of fields that not all of them will ever be used in any given payment.
Laura, what are the advantages as well as the challenges of embracing ISO 20022?
Well, one of the things that, you know, I already touched on is the addresses and what happened with the implementation when banks started sending all this additional address information. But if and when we get to the point that we have actual structured addresses, the belief in the industry is that it will vastly improve sanction scanning, because banks will truly be able to distinguish a street from a country around the world. And there, I was looking earlier, there is a massive spreadsheet that the PMPG has put together country by country, which indicates where to map the various elements of an address for each country. It's quite impressive. So that is a big hope, a big advantage that people believe will happen with ISO. Aside from that, there are a number of additional parties that are possible. There's the concept of an ultimate creditor and an ultimate debtor, which didn't exist, for example. So the belief is that you'll be able to provide more information and process payments more efficiently. From a bank's perspective, from an end customer, from particularly from a corporate, the big payback that we believe is going to be in accounts receivable and accounts payable. So truly being able to send all of the information. So yes, you invoiced me $10,000, but I'm paying you, $9,325, and here's why. Rather than having to send that outside of the payment, having to go into an exception scenario and figure out what that difference is in the amount of the payment. There have been some studies done where companies have seen significant savings, for example, in Canada, where they've already embraced ISO in their accounts receivable and payable processing. However, that relies on, and particularly in the U.S., I think the banks and the fintechs have got to collaborate on providing tools both for customers to seamlessly provide that information when they're initiating a payment, and for the bank to be able to send that information back to them, because both of those channels are very oriented towards the existing SWIFT and Fedwire formats, and they need to be expanded. So that would be on the challenge side of the equation, is you've got the ability to pass all this data, but the banks and the fintechs have got to figure out a way to make it easy for the customers to do that.
Laura, a follow-up question to your comments just now. So I think we're all happy to report that most countries are reporting that they are going to be live with the ISO standard by 2024. I believe that's the furthest out I've heard some countries. Some countries, however, have reported that they don't plan on adopting the 20022 standard at all. In your opinion, where does that put those countries? Are they going to be in okay shape? Are they going to be out of the game? Are they going to just have a harder time transacting with the countries that are on the standard? What are your thoughts?
I think that the last option, C.
Yeah, okay.
They're going to have a harder time transacting. I don't foresee that the banks that are in ISO countries will, I'll say, dumb down the messages to send to those countries. So that means that they will, and I think, if they're members of SWIFT, for example, they have to be able to support receiving that data. Whether they pass it on to their customer, is a different question. What kind of legal framework they have that might or might not require that, different question. But I really do think that, they will be disadvantaged going forward if they aren't able to join this new world with expanded data.
Thank you.
And Laura, what are the limitations of FI's technical infrastructure that would inhibit a bank from being able to fully embrace the advantages that you spoke about earlier?
I think I've kind of touched on that to some extent, and that is that there are all of these legacy systems that are designed around the existing formats. I saw one study a couple of years ago that estimated that even at a medium-sized regional bank in the U.S., there were something like 200 different systems that could be impacted by ISO 20022. That's when you start thinking about things like the addresses and the fact that they can now, they will have to be structured ultimately, but they can be longer. So for banks to be able to leverage both a customer initiating and receiving all of that data, there's a lot of work to be done behind the scenes. And I think banks are going to be very creative. You know, I don't think many banks will attempt to tackle all 200 systems. I think they will find ways to translate that and focus only on the most critical. But that's going to be the challenge, is you have all this data, but you've got to be able to ingest it and you've got to be able to send it out.
Laura, how can an API-first platform approach help banks, you know, especially those with significant high-value transfer volumes, more easily embrace new iterations of Fedwire?
So on the API side, particularly from a high volume perspective, you know, it's a much more efficient, you know, literally more throughput per second mechanism than things that we have historically used in the payment arena, like MQ. Not to dog MQ, but it is, you know, APIs have been proven to have much better throughput. The other advantage of APIs is they play very well in the cloud. And pretty much every bank we walk into these days wants to start moving processing to the cloud, which is a bit of a switch from a couple of years ago when everybody's like, oh my gosh, you can't put payments in the cloud. And, you know, there are a lot of ways to put things in the cloud, including private networks. So APIs are very well suited for that. But the, you know, chief thing that we see, you know, that I noted, is we are developing a single payment API that is based on ISO. It is not purely ISO for the reasons we talked about earlier, in that there is not really a single ISO format. So you have to mix and match a little bit. But our goal is, with that API, that bank can give us the data, whether it's existing Fedwire or once Fedwire moves to ISO, they give us the same data and we handle all of those little nuances of whether it's going in the existing Fedwire format or RTP or FedNow, or, you know, so you get much better interoperability. You as a bank can direct the payments to the appropriate, or to your desired place, I'm going to say appropriate, based on the characteristics of how it needs to be made. So the whole goal is that API insulates, you know, back to those 200 systems, and obviously not all of those are initiating payments, but for that subset of systems that is initiating payments, then the API insulates you from having to change those as these payment rails grow and expand. And I'm sure there will be tweaks made as they get more mature and we realize some of the mistakes that we've made along the way. So that's where, you know, our belief is the API provides that layer between whatever channels you have at a bank initiating payments or receiving payments and the actual networks.
And it would seem, Laura, that in particular, Form 3's approach would be a great advantage, especially to FIs having to navigate their legacy core systems and their legacy infrastructures. Would you say that that is probably a big advantage to have an API first approach to layer on top of that legacy infrastructure?
Yes. So rather than having to take all of these different message formats coming, being spit out from, you know, 100 different systems, you feed them into the API and then it handles whatever the variations are. So those systems do not have to be aware of the different payment schemes, the different rules, the different timing. You know, we're finally approaching something that, you know, 20 years ago, I thought we would be in a position where the customer gives you a payment instruction and says, I want this to be made, you know, by this date. And that's about it. You know, send this the cheapest way, because of course that's what the customer is going to ask. Send this the least expensive way that you can and get it there by this date or this hour, because, you know, it may be that I need this to be paid right this instant, or I can wait until, you know, 2 days out. So that we are finally approaching that. with these, with the ISO format being a standard, that the customer won't have to know or care what their particular payment type is. All they'll need to know is, I want to get it here by this date and in this currency. Got a ways to go before we get through, particularly instant payments cross border. But there was a lot of talk of that last week in the conference as well. And, you know, I do think we will start to see that, particularly among the countries that have already embraced ISO.
Lauren, Albert, I want to thank you both again for sharing your insights and perspective. We hope to have you back on soon.